Osamu Watanabe, the CEO of the Japan External Trade Organization, JETRO, was explaining to me one afternoon in Tokyo how Japanese companies were moving vast amounts of low and middle-range technical work and manufacturing to China, doing the basic fabrication there, and then bringing it back to Japan for final assembly. Japan was doing this despite a bitter legacy of mistrust between the two countries, which was intensified by the Japanese invasion of China in the last century. Historically, he noted, a strong Japan and a strong China have had a hard time coexisting. But not today, at least not for the moment. Why not? I asked. The reason you can have a strong Japan and a strong China at the same time, he said, is because of the supply chain. It is a win-win for both. The Dell theory had its first real test in December 2004 when Taiwan held parliamentary elections. President Chen's pro-independence Democratic Progressive Party was expected to win the legislative runoff over the main opposition Nationalist Party, which favored closer ties with Beijing. Chen framed the election as a popular referendum on his proposal to write a new constitution that would formally enshrine Taiwan's independence, ending the purposely ambiguous status quo. Had Chen won and moved ahead on his agenda to make Taiwan its own motherland, as opposed to maintaining the status quo fiction that it is a province of the mainland, it could have led to a Chinese military assault on Taiwan. Everyone in the region was holding his or her breath. And what happened? Motherboards won over motherland. A majority of Taiwanese voted against the pro-independence governing party legislative candidates, ensuring that the DPP would not have a majority in parliament. I believe the message Taiwanese voters were sending was not that they never want Taiwan to be independent. It was that they do not want to upset the status quo right now, which has been so beneficial to so many Taiwanese. The voters seemed to understand clearly how interwoven they had become with the mainland, and they wisely opted to maintain their de facto independence rather than force de jure independence, which might have triggered a Chinese invasion and a very uncertain future. Warning. What I said when I put forth the McDonald's theory, I would repeat even more strenuously with the Dell theory. It does not make wars obsolete, and it does not guarantee that governments will not engage in wars of choice, even governments that are part of major supply chains. To suggest so would be naive. It guarantees only that governments whose countries are enmeshed in global supply chains will have to think three times, not just twice, about engaging in anything but a war of self-defense. And if they choose to go to war anyway, the price they will pay will be 10 times higher than it was a decade ago, and probably 10 times higher than whatever the leaders of that country think. It is one thing to lose your McDonald's. It is quite another to fight a war that costs you your place in a 21st century supply chain that may not come back around for a long time. Infosys versus Al-Qaeda. Alas, a new source for geopolitical instability has emerged only in recent years, for which even the updated Dell theory can provide no restraint. It is the emergence of mutant global supply chains. That is, non-state actors, be they criminals or terrorists, who learn to use all the elements of the flat world to advance a highly destabilizing, even nihilistic agenda. I first started thinking about this when Nandan Nilekani, the Infosys CEO, was giving me that tour I referred to in Chapter 1 of his company's global video conferencing center at its Bangalore headquarters. As Nandan explained to me how Infosys could get its global supply chain together at once for a virtual conference in that room, a thought popped into my head. Who else uses open sourcing and supply chaining so imaginatively? The answer, of course, is Al-Qaeda. Al-Qaeda has learned to use many of the same instruments for global collaboration that Infosys uses. But instead of producing products and profits with them, it has produced mayhem and murder. This is a particularly difficult problem. In fact, it may be the most vexing geopolitical problem for flat world countries that want to focus on the future. The flat world, unfortunately, is a friend of both Infosys and Al-Qaeda. The Dell theory will not work at all against these informal Islamo-Leninist terror networks because they are not a state with a population that will hold its leaders accountable or with a domestic business lobby that might restrain them. These mutant global supply chains are formed for the purpose of destruction, not profit. They don't need investors, only recruits, donors, and victims. Yet these mobile, self-financing mutant supply chains use all the tools of collaboration offered by the flat world, open sourcing to raise money, to recruit followers, and to stimulate and disseminate ideas, outsourcing to train recruits, and supply chaining to distribute the tools and the suicide bombers to undertake operations. The U.S. Central Command has a name for this whole underground network: the Virtual Caliphate. And its leaders and innovators understand the flat world almost as well as Walmart, Dell, and Infosys do. I tried to explain that you cannot understand the rise of Al-Qaeda emotionally and politically without reference to the flattening of the world. What I am arguing here is that you cannot understand the rise of Al-Qaeda technically without reference to the flattening of the world either. Globalization in general has been Al-Qaeda's friend in that it has helped to solidify a revival of Muslim identity and solidarity, with Muslims in one country much better able to see and sympathize with the struggles of their brethren in another country, thanks to the internet and satellite television. The flattening of the world has also led to more urbanization and large-scale immigration to the West of many of these young, unemployed, frustrated Arab Muslim males, while simultaneously making it much easier for informal open-source networks of these young men to form, operate, and interconnect. This certainly has been a boon for underground extremist Muslim political groups. There has been a proliferation of these informal mutual supply chains throughout the Arab Muslim world today. Small networks of people who move money through hawalas, hand-to-hand financing networks, who recruit through alternative education systems like the madrasas, and who communicate through the internet and other tools of the global information revolution.